two shilas that came up this week. And again, as always, you'll tell me which one you want to talk about. So one shila will go in the order that they were received. One shila was as follows. Someone texted me as follows. Hi, Rabbi. I hope you're well. I feel more comfortable asking you this shila as you don't know me personally, and it's a particularly sensitive topic. My wife and I are newly married. She is currently in Nida and suffers from anxiety. She is going through a particularly tough time at the moment at work and really needs my support. The fact that I can't comfort her with a hug is really distressing her and is causing genuine shalom bias issues. I cannot let her believe that she isn't the most important thing for me. What can I do? So that is a shaila that comes up more and more frequently now. I don't know. I don't think I had that shaila for 15 years, and I got it like three times in the last 6 months. So that is, people suffering with anxiety issues. So is there any kulas in terms of Hilchos Nida as far as that's concerned? Second shaila, a young man came over to me in yeshiva and told me that it recently came to his attention that his grandmother, who lives a couple of blocks away from him, has never tovled any of her kalim in her kitchen. She keeps kosher home, but she never tovled any of her kalim. So it came up because she had attended a shiur given by the local rabbi about tefilas kalim, and the grandson asked the grandma, how was the rabbi's shiur? And grandma said, it was so strict. And he's like, the local rabbi just went through the basic halachos of tefilas kalim. Like, there was nothing terribly strict about it, I'm sure, you know? And he's like, why? What was so strict? He's like, he said you have to bring all your stuff to a mikvah. You know, like, it was just so strict. So he came to his attention that his grandmother never really tovled. Maybe she tovled some pots and pans or something, but for the most part, didn't really tovle her kalim. So he asked her, you know, please allow me to tovle your kalim for you. You don't have to do a thing. I'll bring all your kalim to the mikvah for you. I'll take care of it. I'll do it. And she's like, no, your grandfather ate on these kalim for 50 years and he never complained about it. You know, you don't need to, you know, she was not at all happy about it. She was not into it. So the young man and his father came up with a plan. Grandma was going to be out of the house for a couple of hours on Sunday. And they were going to take the opportunity, while grandma was out of the house, to sneak into her house and take all the kalim, schlep them to a kalim mikveh, tovel them, wash them, bring them back, put them back in the house, and she'll never be the wiser for it. She'll never know, you know, that it happened. And so they wanted to know two things. First of all, is that okay? Are you allowed to do something like that? And second of all, if you're going to do that and you don't have time to get every kli in the house, because it's a lot, it's going to be a lot of work to find all the kalim, bring them, schlep them all in the car to the keli mikvah, tovel them, wash them, you know, dry them, put them back, all before grandma returns, right? So so what should they prioritize in terms of tefillah's kelim? Which kelim should they do first? So that is shaila number two. So again, shaila number one is about hugging an anxious wife who's in Nida, and shaila number two about tefilling grandma's kelim without permission. So let's do a first, anyone on the Zoom could put in your votes. So first we'll do an in-person vote. All those who want to talk about hugging the anxious wife. Okay, all those who want to talk about tabling grandma's kalim. Okay, and you weren't here for the shilas. Okay, let's see what the Zoomers say. 1-1-2-2-2. Okay, so we're going to talk about tabling grandma's kalim. Okay, so let's discuss tabling grandma's kalim. Okay, so again, there are two primary issues. The two primary issues are they allowed to take grandma's kelim to the mikvah without a permission? And if they have a short amount of time and won't get to everything, how should they prioritize? So first of all, you know, is it even your responsibility? Meaning it's her, meaning there's a shayla before the shaylas. Like, how much is this your issue that she's not tabling her kelim? She has a mitzvah tefillas kelim, she's not doing it. So to what extent, like, what's your obligation here? So the obligation is hachech tochiach. So that's so you already did that. You already told her that she should have told her kelim. Is it to be matzil her from an iser, that she's violating an iser every time she's using kelim that, or maybe to be matzil yourself from an iser, because every time you eat at grandma's house, you're going to be eating on kelim that aren't tovel, unless you tovel them. So okay, so if it's about you and about every time you eat there, so then there's then vaday, you know, there's what to talk about over here, because it is your issue if you're going to be eating there. But if it's primarily about the fact that she's eating on the non-tovled kelim, you know, there is an interesting discussion whether tefillas kelim is a mitzvah or a matir. meaning, do we view the act of tevila as a mitzvah, or does the act of tevila just matir the kli for usage? You're not allowed to use it until you tovel it. So from the Rambam, the mashmos is that tevila is a matir, because the Rambam himself says va'acharkach, once you tovel the kli, the Rambam's lashon is va'acharkach yutru la'achila, then it becomes mutter to use them for eating. So a person can never use a kli even once until the kli goes to the mikvah, right? Meaning that's another misconception about tevilas kelim. They think you have like a one-time heter. There is no like one-time freebie. In most of halacha, there is no one-time freebie, right? You don't get to eat just one cheeseburger, right? So there's no one-time freebie in tevilas kelim either. Tosus Rid, however, learns that it's a mitzvah to tevil your kelim, and therefore, if you haven't tovled the kli and you're somewhere where you cannot tovel your kli, then you can use it without tevila, because anus rachman apatre, meaning when it comes to a mitzvah, so if you don't have the access to the mitzvah, then you don't have to do the mitzvah. However, the Ramah paskins in Sivches, in Sivim Kovchav, in Yoridea, that a person can't use a kli even b'derech harai, even if he doesn't have easy access to a keli mikvah. So Avni Nezer seems to argue in the Ramah, because he says that if there's no possibility to tovel the kli, then you can rely on the Taisus Rid, and you can use the kli without tevila even many times. But if there's a possibility to tovel the kli, then there's no one-time freebie, right? So it could be that this touches on that, meaning to what extent do you have an obligation to make sure that grandma does every mitzvah she can possibly do. To be matzil her from an iser, that maybe you do have an obligation to try to be matzil other Jews from an iser. So it might somewhat depend on mitzvah matir, but either way, there's certainly an inyan of ocheach tochiach or of arvos or of just general the aftal reach kamocha to try to encourage mitzvah performance as much as you can. So let's assume this is a noble thing to do, and I think that's fair to assume it's a noble thing to want to do. But is it an iser? So now we move to stage two. Is it an avera to go take her kalim without her permission to tovel the kalim? Meaning, are you allowed to, let's say, damage somebody else or use somebody else's stuff in a way in order to enable them to fulfill a halachic obligation? I once had the shaila as follows. Someone once asked me, a guy works as a tailor, and he had someone come to his shop with a brand new suit that they bought, a non-from Jew, came with the suit, and the guy took one look at the tailor, took one look at the suit, and he's like, there's definitely shotness in here, right? So his shaila was, is he allowed to rip out the shotness, replace it with replace the lining with something that's not shotness, and then sew it back up and give it back to him like that? Meaning, the guy didn't ask him to take out the shotness. The guy doesn't want him ripping open the whole collar, the whole lining. So is he allowed to do that? So what would you say in such a case?
It's like a swerve like EO from like seal those of like a manos and return them.
What's that?
Isn't that a story? Isn't something going to be more about like Eov stealing?
With Eov, yeah, but that was the sados of the Yisomim that they would they would work on them. They would steal them and then make them better. But that's they were actually making them physically better. Over here, you're making them halachically better, but physically, it's really there's nothing better than when it's sewn by the original manufacturer. You know, a lot of times you get
used. Public homewear for a mitzvah, but we would not say for.
I don't think he said it's just different. So you need a raya that you're allowed to be mazik someone else's property, right, in order to enable them to do a mitzvah. So that's really the core issue. Can you damage someone else's property? Now over here, in this case, you're not damaging, right? You're just bringing it to the mikvah. Nothing happens to them in the mikvah, but you're taking a risk with their property. If you need a raya that it's taking a risk with their property, look at the bottom of the keli mikvah. There are things there, right? There are kelim there. Right, it's a shaila, right? Meaning if you see like a really nice, let's say you drop something you need to go in to get anyway, right? So you got your scuba gear, you got your bathing suit on, you're climbing in. Once you're there, there's like some really nice stuff down there. Right? There's a really good knife that, you know, is very good for cutting meat. Are you allowed to take it, right? Or do you assume it's hefker? Or do you assume that whoever dropped it is on, you know, he's on his way back with his scuba gear, you know, to come in and fetch it? Okay, it's a different shaila. But, you know, people drop things in the mikvah all the time. People break things by the mikvah all the time because everything's slippery and you drop something on those tiles and they break. So you're going to tumble all of grandma's glasses. So you may take 10 glasses out of her house and return 8 of them. right? So you know that it's taking a risk with someone else's property. So are you allowed to damage or take a risk with somebody else's property? So Rav Blai in Pisachei Choshen quotes a Gemara in Brachos. Gemara in Brachos talks about haroa klayim b'shuk, amotze klayim b'shuk. If you find klayim, you find shatness in the market. So poshta afilu b'shuk, the Gemara says, you poshe it, you take it off even in public, if it's klayim d'oraisa, if it's shatness d'oraisa, you take it off even in public, because ein chach mein tvuna ein etze neged Hashem, that there's nothing no amount of your own dignity and your own self-respect should override the respect you have to have for the Ribbono Shel Olam. If it's only Nisa Drabanan, if it's only Shat Nisa Drabanan, so then we say that Gadol Kavod Abrios is Docha Lo Sasesha B'Torah, that it's Docha Nisa Drabanan. But if it's Nisa Daraisa, you have to get naked in public if you find that what you're wearing is Shatness. But there are two Girsos in that Gemara, and the Nedib Yehuda made this Gemara famous, I think, because he has a famous tshuva. You know this tshuva, the Nedib Yehuda with the Yeshiva Bachar that was engaged to get married to a girl, and there's only one little secret that he had, and that was that he had an affair with her mother over the course of 3 years while he was boarding at their house. And his shaila was, does he have to tell the shver? Does he have to tell the father-in-law? Because since he was sleeping with the mother-in-law, so she's asura to the father-in-law. Because so does he have to tell the father-in-law that, look, you're asura to, you know, mazel tov to me and your daughter that we're getting married, but you know, you're asura to your wife, so you guys are getting divorced. So does he have to tell that to the father-in-law? You know, son-in-law, father-in-law relationships are complicated as it is. You know, like that would complicate things further. So his taina why he wouldn't have to say anything is Gadol Kavod Abrios, Shadoch Lo Sasesha B'Torah, that even though the father-in-law is going to be violating an iser every time he's with his wife, but the Kavod Abrios of the family is Ayum Venora, meaning that the embarrassment it's going to cause in the family when this story gets out. So maybe better to keep it under wraps and not say anything. Right, so in the view, the Madur Kama, Arachayim Sim Lamed Hey, has all tshuva, where half the tshuva is about the gedarim of what it means, Gadol Kavod Abrios Shadoch Lo Sasesha B'Torah, an analysis of the sugya, and the other half of the tshuva was, the guy had asked, how do I do tshuva for what I did? Meaning, give me like, what's the tshuva samishka? Like, how many fasts do I have to take? How much do I have to, like, you know, they used to do tshuva samishka, which is like different sigufim. They would whip themselves or roll around in the mud or roll around naked in the snow or, like, you know, crazy things like that. So he wanted to know, like, how much do I need to do in order to do tshuva? So the Nedib Yehuda has a line there where he says, if you would live kishnos misushelach, you wouldn't have enough time to do a tshuva samishkal properly. So he said, you should learn Torah basmada, you should only fast two or three times a week. You know, I'm going to go easy on you, you know, things like that. But the first part of the tshuva is where he discusses Gadol Kavod Abrios. So he points out that the Rambam and the Rashi have two different girsos in that Gemara. Hamotzi klayim. So one girsa is hamotzi klayim bishuk. He just finds klayim. And the other is hamotzi klayim bibigdo, meaning what's it saying, that you find shatness on yourself, or you find shatness on somebody else that you got to take it off. So he said nafkamina would be how you define shevi al tasa. That if you find it on your somebody else, so what do you mean? Shevi al tasa, just don't say anything. And it's shevi al tasa. He says, no. But the guy is wearing it b'kum ba'ase. So the fact that you're shevi al tasa doesn't matter. He's wearing it b'kum ba'ase. If you find it on yourself, so then you are kum ba'ase in doing the aveira. So he says, nafkamina would be if somebody else is doing an aveira b'kum ba'ase, but you would be shevi al tasa to not alert him to that. Is that called shevi al tasa or kum ba'ase? Like if the father-in-law is going to be doing the aveira b'kum ba'aseh every time he's with his wife, but you're going to be shevi al tasa by not telling him, so is that called Gadol Kavod Abrios is dochel lo sasesha b'torah b'shevi al tasa? Whatever. But the point is, the Rav Blai points out that Gemara says that you should be koro, you should tear off someone else's beged, or assuming like that gears in the Gemara, someone else's beged, you should tear it off of them. Afilu b'shuk. The Gemara says that one of the Amoraim saw a woman who was dressed in a non-sanua way, and he went and he was korea the beged right off of her, the non-sanua, the offending beged. Meaning the stomach, she was layered, right? Meaning otherwise, like, it's not going to help, right? So he was korea the outlandish or attention-grabbing beged off of her. And then she said, I'm not even Jewish. And he, you know, made, you know, he tried to make a comment to defuse the situation, and he paid her and whatever, he paid her for the damages or whatever. But the implication was that if she was Jewish, then he did nothing wrong. That you're allowed to be koreya, that you're allowed to damage someone else's property in order to save them from an issur. Rav Bloy even goes a step further, and he says it's possible that you're allowed to physically harm somebody to stop them from an aveira. You know, physically harm them. The Ramah writes in Chosh Mishpat in Tav Chaf Aleph Sif Yud Gimel that if you see somebody doing an aveira and they are tachas yado ureshuso, they are people that are within your jurisdiction, you can hit them to prevent the issur, just not after the fact. You're not allowed to beat them up afterwards. Why did you do that? And then just beat the gesundheit out of them. You can't do that. But if you're going to prevent them from doing the issur, you can hit them to prevent them from doing the issur. So there are three opinions about what exactly the parameters of that are, because that's, you know, quite a chiddush. Shmuel Sedashin says it means only somebody under your control. It means like your own children. You know, it's got to be someone that really has to answer to you. Maria Sad is a Jew, but he agrees with that as well. Second approach is Marshall says that no, it means any Jew. He says, but it depends who you are. Meaning you're only allowed to do that if you're an Adam Muchsak Bekashrus Sheyadua Shalashem Shemayim Osa. That everyone knows that you're doing it L'Shem Shemayim, and no one's going to have any Hava Amina that you're doing this just stam because you like to assault people. Right? Meaning it's got to be Dafka that it's L'Shem Shemayim. It's not so clear that you could say this about too many people, right? The Marshal writes that stamad de'inchi lav kol kamine, that most people, you can't just make this assumption, because otherwise l'shafkas chayil l'kol birya, meaning anytime you want to beat someone up, you'll just be like, I think you're about to speak Lashon Hara. Boom! punch him in the mouth, you know, for the Lashon Hara that you thought he was about to speak. So like that wouldn't be, that's not really shayuch. So you can't allow just anyone to do this. Then the third approach is the Netziv in his commentary to the Sheiltos and Parshas Vayeshev says that the Rambam holds it's even usher for your Eved, even someone who's Tachas Shilton or Tachas Yado. What do you do about the Rambam? The Rambam is just saying that you're putter from pain, but you're not allowed to do it. You're not allowed to actually physically harm a person. You know, if there's a discussion whether you can hit somebody, so Rav Bloy says, okay, so there's three shittos, but it's a discussion whether you're allowed to hit somebody. So kal v'chomer, if it's even a discussion whether you're allowed to hit somebody, of course you're allowed to damage someone's property to prevent them from doing an aveira. It's got to be obvious that's allowed in order to prevent an issur. If what you're damaging is the offending item, right? Meaning, if someone's about to eat a cheeseburger, you can't go burn their house down, right? you could grab the cheeseburger and throw it in the garbage, right? Meaning it's the offending item that you're going after. So that's what you're allowed to do. But that would certainly be a limitation on that. Now the distinction that Rav Bloy makes between doing physical damage to a person and damaging property is an important distinction posts can make in Hilchos Purim, where within Shalosh Yom, I might as well mention. Right, in Hilchos Purim, there's a din that if you damage someone in the course of a celebration of Purim, the Ramah quotes this in two places in Hilchos Purim, that if you damage someone in the course of a celebration of Hilchos Purim, you're potter from paying for damages. So Mishapura quotes Achronim, I think maybe the Bach and others, that say, yeah, that's if you damage their property. But if you physically harm them, then you're not going to be potter from damages. So it's like a bigger inyan, you know, it's a bigger issue if you physically harm someone than if you just, than if you harm their property. So anyway, so it would seem that to prevent an issur, you're allowed to take a risk with someone else's property, right? So now the question is, now that you're allowed to do it, right? I think it's fair to say you're allowed to do it. Now that you're allowed to do it, how do you prioritize, right? Which items do you bring first, second, third, right? So that's a very tricky question. So the first thing you want to think about is maybe d'oraisas versus rabbanans, right? Whether tefilas kelim is a din d'oraisa to begin with is machlokas rishonim. Tosos quotes Rabbi Natam, the Ravid also say that the simple pshat of the Gemara sounds like tefilas kelim is a din d'oraisa. However, the Rambam learns that it's only a din midrabbana any kelim, that all tefilas kelim is only midrabbana according to the Rambam. The Gemara quotes a pasuk, it's an asmachta, but really it's a din d'rabbana. Nafkamina, so Taz infers from the Shulchan Aruch and Sif Yudalid that it must be d'oraisa, And that's why a katan is not neman to say that he tovled your kelim. Because it's in daraisa, the katan doesn't have nemanos on the daraisa, he has nemanos on the drabanan. So if you send your child to go tovel the kelim, so he's not allowed to, you're not allowed to believe that he did it unless you were with him. It's not that he lacks the capacity to tovel kelim, it's not that there's like a level of lishma that he needs to have. It's just that you need to know that he did it, and you don't know that he did it unless you were there with him to see him do it. So he doesn't have ne'amanos for that, right? That's a major shaila that the post can discuss in Mishloach Manos. So there's a Binyan Sion that the Mishnah Berurah quotes by Mishloach Manos, where the Mishnah Berurah quotes misquotes a Binyan Sion actually, where he says that the Binyan Sion says that in order that ideally when you give Mishloach Manos, it should be al yedei shliach. That you shouldn't deliver it directly. Send someone else to deliver the Mishloach Manos. If you look at the Binyan Sion, he doesn't say that. He says, Atu, it's called Mishloach, because you think it means Alidei Shliach? That's ridiculous! You know, he says, it's called Mishloach, because it's alluding to the fact that if you're just Shaleach, even if the other person doesn't want it, and they're Mochel, that you're Mekayim the Mitzvah. The Shiluach itself is the Kiyum. Because it can't be that it's got to be Alidei Shliach. But the Mishnah Berurah quotes, that to be Mahadir to send it Alidei Shliach. So a lot of people do like that Mishnah Berurah. So what if you send your kids? What if you send children to be Shaleach Manos and you don't watch them go and do it? So it's a big discussion. So Mishloach Manos is a Mitzvah Midrabanan. Is it Midrabanan? Midivre Kabbalah, right? So do our children Neman, not Neman? So it's a Gishmaka topic. Okay, so you would imagine, since we pass in Tefillas Kelim is Doraisa, but the Gemara is explicit, that Tefillas Kelim of glass is for sure not Doraisa. Right, glass is only, it's definitely chayiv in tefillah, and with a bracha. A lot of people know that there's some difference between glass and metal, and they think that you don't say a bracha on tefillas kelim of glass. Not true, you do say a bracha, just like you say a bracha on mikra megillah, which is a mitzvah midrabanan, just like you say a bracha on ner chanukah, which is a mitzvah midrabanan, you say a bracha on mitzvah midrabanan. So we say a bracha on tefillas kelim of glass also. But you would prioritize those things that need tefillah midaraisa over those that need midrabanan. Now the question was asked, so the part of the guy's question also was, he's going to take two trips back and forth to the mikvah. How many brachas do you make? Normally you go to the keli mikvah, you make one bracha at the beginning and you tovel all your kelim. Ideally you shouldn't even speak in between other things that are not mitzorchei tefillah. You shouldn't speak in between. But if you leave and then you come back, so even though it was one activity for the day, but you leave and then you come back, so it could be that you need a second bracha the next time you come back, because just the fact that you drove away, you unpacked the car, you came back, you repacked the car, that's too much of a hefsik. At a certain point there is a hefsik, and even though the driving was l'tzorach l'tzvila, I don't know, it's a tough call. You need a new bracha, but I would think my netiya is that it's too much of a hefsik. Then, you know, there's a question whether, you know, maybe if you take, let's say there are 12 drinking glasses, right? Maybe just total 6 of them. They're all identical anyway, right? And that way, you'll make all, anytime anyone drinks one of those glasses, you'll make it into a Safik Drabanan. A Safik Drabanan Lakula. Now, generally, you're not supposed to generate a Safik Drabanan, but you're limited over here, right? So maybe better to have a Safik Drabanan Lakula. Or what if you have a pot that may or may not have been tovled? Because grandma says, yeah, I think maybe some of my pots have been tovled. So there's a pot that may or may not have been tovled. Pots chayv and tefillah midaraisa. You have a glass that definitely has not been tovled. That's only chayv and tefillah midrabanan. How do you prioritize the suffix daraisa or the vadai drabanan? Right, so that's machlokes rishonim. But the din suffix daraisa luchumra is itself a din daraisa, or is that it's meaning when the Torah tells you that to do the mitzvah daraisa, the Torah is telling you afilu b'makom suffix, right? That's din daraisa. Or Safik Daraisa L'chumra itself only din Rabbana. That mid Daraisa, Safik Daraisa is really the Kula. It's mid Rabbana that the Messiah is Safik Daraisa L'chumra. So since that's a machlokas, and there's a possibility Safik Daraisa L'chumra is din Daraisa, maybe the Safik Daraisa should override the Vada's mid Rabbana. Another factor to consider, frequency of use of the Kelim. There may be some Kelim that are very rarely used, and other Kelim that are used all the time. So if, even though the ones that are rarely used maybe chayiv and tefillah midaraisa, and the ones that are used all the time are only chayiv midrabanan, or maybe not lechaladeos, the ones that are used all the time maybe aren't chayiv and tefillah lechaladeos, but they're used so much more frequently. So does that matter? So the Chorit does, right? I mean, Rav Yosef Engel has a beautiful essay about quantity versus quality in mitzvahs. That do you assume that it's better to do one big mitzvah or do 1,000 little mitzvahs? Right? Meaning at a certain point, do you assume that quantity is more important than quality? So he brings a raya from his starting point is a Ran. The Ran of Maseches Yuma. The Ran talks about the following case. That if, let's say, you have a doctor says that you need to eat meat, to have a refuah, whatever illness you have, you're lucky enough to have an illness that the medicine is a steak, right? So the doctor tells you need to have a steak, and it's Shabbos, and you don't have any cooked kosher steak in your house, right? You don't have anything. Or let's say the medicine is to eat raw steak, let's say, whatever. Right? What do they call that? Tartar, whatever. You ever? I once accidentally ordered at a restaurant something that sounded good, and then they gave it to me, and I'm like, ugh! And they're like, well, it's raw. I'm like, why would you give me raw food? They're like, because you ordered it. You know, and the waitress said, you ordered it with such confidence. So if you open up your fridge and there's a raw steak in the fridge, but it's nevela. Why do you have a nevela in your fridge? I'm not asking any questions, but you have a nevela in the fridge. But then you look in your backyard and there's your cow in the backyard. So you have two options. You could either shecht your cow and eat it, or you could eat the nevela. Now, if you shecht the cow and eat it, it'll be kosher meat, but it's Shabbos. So it'll be kosher meat, but you'll violate the Isser Skila of shechting an animal on Shabbos. If you eat the steak from the fridge, it's going to be an Isser Lav of nevela. So which one is better to violate? Nevela is for sure better to violate. It's just a low sasei. Chil Shabbos is. So says the Ran, yeah, but what if the doctor says you need to eat 10 kezesim of it? So he says, if you shech the cow, you'll violate one chil Shabbos. And then you'll have kosher meat, you'll eat 10 kezesim of kosher meat. You eat the nevela, you're going to be violating 10 separate isur in nevela because you're going to be eating 10 kezesim of it. Quantity outweighs the quality. And it's more important to not violate a quantity of isurim. So it could be the frequency of usage makes a difference over here. So Minchas Chinuch has such a comment that even though Hamavazis, Alivazis, Zosim, Chomesh, you don't spend more than 20% of your money on a mitzvah, when it comes to mezuzah, you do spend more than 20% because mezuzah is every second of every day. It's not like a mitzvah, it's every second of every day. So maybe the quantity makes it, raises it. Now the question whether you should rely on kulas. There are posts that say that any electronically that needs to be plugged into a wall to make it work, like a sandwich maker or something like that, does not require a tevila because it's mechuber lekarka. So not all the posts are thrilled with that svara. Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, Zichron Levracha, held of that, by the way. His grandson told me, Shmuel Marcus told me that Rav Aaron held that way. But it's Chalkas Yaakov writes that way. So it's mechuber lekarka. So maybe rely on that, right? Because you need to rely on kulas over here if you don't have enough time. Rav Moshe holds that any kli that... that doesn't is not necessary for eating of the food. It's just there for convenience. Let's say like a plate. You could put the food right down on the table also. It's just a little messier. But a soup bowl, like you can't, right? So Rav Moshe says that there's no issur of using the kli when it's something that you don't really technically need the kli because it's not even called that you're using the kli. So maybe grandma won't be violating the issue of using the kli according to that sheet of Rav Moshe. You don't tovel, so tovel all the spoons, but not the forks. You gotta figure out tovel all the glasses, but maybe not. Maybe not, the forks aren't as important. All right, there's so much more to talk. Products that are made by a corporation, by a public, by a company that's not owned by an individual. Rav Shachter won't make a bracha on such kelim. Because he holds that it's only when you kona kelim from an ovik chavim, but not when you kona kelim from this amorphous thing that's not a person at all. So maybe it doesn't require tevila at all. So you have lots and lots of stuff to talk about. Kibud aveim and kibud grandparents, and what if your grandparent tells you to violate an avera, but they're not telling you to violate an avera, they're saying that they want to violate an avera. Okay, a lot more to talk about when we are out of time. So everyone have a wonderful evening, and I'll see you next week. Okay?